recording, and if you have an issue with the recording, you can stay silent and drop. Okay, so this is the platform realization call for March 6th, and we're going to be talking today an overview of the FM metadata use case and the PM dictionary use case, and the what that use case is doing and where it is right now. So, under presentation mode. Okay, so this is a use case in the 5G subcommittee, and Marge Hillis has been working a lot, most of the use case, and I was working the GUI stuff in her absence recently, and then she's back now, so she's working on the use case again. So the idea of FM is not new. You know, it's one of the main OAM functions in FCAPS, the F and FCAPS. And one of the things that needs to happen for FM to work is that definitions of faults need to be loaded into ONAP. This is done through a YAML registration, event registration YAML file, which is an artifact in the PNF onboarding or VNF onboarding package, which is brought into ONAP in design time and stored into the SDC catalog. Once the package is onboarded, what this allows a designer to do is to utilize faults that have been defined, and they can add them to policies with the policy designer in workflows, Workflow Studio, in control loops, with Clamp Designer, to define services on the service designer, and to use them in templates and with the DCA Design Studio. And then as they define a service in design time, it can get distributed with the SDC service CSER package. So in this, a faults defined in this YAML registration get pulled in to this onboarding package, and they can, individual faults can be used in in policies and control loops, and then they get pulled into the various components such as DCAE, and a policy can be defined, and then when that policy is invoked, because a fault comes in via a VES event into the DC collector onto DMAP, it gets used in a microservice, and that fault can then have actions associated with it from ticketing to controller to policy engine, and that's how a particular fault or closed loop can come to use a fault. So the FM metadata use case is essentially about defining more specific fields in a particular fault, so that things such as recovery and additional definitions such as its probable cause and so forth can guide what happens to that fault, how the what action that ONAP takes when that fault occurs. So another thing besides the VES registration and VES definition work that happened in Dublin, which is probably the biggest part of that this use case, which is already done, is that we would also like to have the display of what gets onboarded in these VES registration YAMLs to be in a more human readable format. And excuse me, in the SDC Design Studio is where we're looking to have this GUI be developed, and Nokia is working on developing something for that, and I'll talk more about that later as we come to it. So this was a page that we put together in preparation for one of our conferences at the DDF. So this is just an overview page of what we're trying to do in this use case: support, review, and finalize the VES event listener specification and VES event registration specification containing the FM metadata format and content, which is done now. Onboard the FM metadata through the as a YAML file through the VES registration YAML file, and then a display of the FM metadata in the GUI to allow a user to create policies. So this part of it won't actually happen yet at first, but just to be able to look at it in a more human readable format is the objective for now. And I'll show you some what that might look like in a few slides. Okay, and then update the VNF requirements to the FM metadata artifact. I know we're currently working on this. Marge is spearheading that. That isn't due until M4, of course, and we're coming up to M3, but in M2, we have a basic draft outline of the main groupings of requirements changes that need to happen for this use case. Okay. So fault events carry basic information about a fault that's occurring, and the idea is that we're adding additional metadata to help explain and give more details on the fault so that either policies or closed loops or a user can use them more intelligently. So basically, we're identifying FM metadata fields that the NF, that box could provide, the VNF or PNF can provide, and that the YAML registration file could include to define those VES events that would be coming from the NF. And one of the major objectives, of course, was to come up with a common name for the fields and definitions for the fields that because they're largely driven by 3GPP. We wanted these definitions to also be agreed in ONAP because they're kind of driven from an outside standard, and that, you know, ONAP crosses multiple standards and boxes and so forth. So some of the fields are recommended and others are optional. And we're providing the information in the fault registration record, which obviates the need for a separate dictionary artifact to be provided. So initially, we had started to propose an actual separate FM dictionary. And if you were there for some of those presentations and calls and discussions, we had talked about providing a completely separate sort of dictionary that would be browsable and usable by an operator. But here now we're integrating it into the FM metadata into the YAML definitions itself, which you'll see in a second here in the next couple of slides. So there are also the ability to define faults versus alarms. And not all vendors and not all boxes are, you know, some boxes are maybe simpler and may not have the need for both faults and alarms. But the idea is that an alarm is something that you're raising a red flag, or it's a notification to an operator. Whereas a fault is a lower level instance of something that went wrong that may or may not raise an alarm. So an idea of the fault is that, you know, there's lower level details that maybe a higher level service provider or operator may not need to know about. They just want to know about the higher condition, right? So one example is, you know, when your car, think of your car when the low tire pressure light goes on, that just indicates that one of your tires has a problem. And that would be the alarm. So the light goes on and an operator is notified some action needs to happen. And then the faults would have left rear, right rear, left front, right front, you know, would tell you more details about that fault. Okay, so for example, you might have a circuit pack, or you might have components within a circuit pack. You might have a modem board that went wrong and subcomponents within that modem board. You just want to let the operator know there's something wrong at the DU or box level, or possibly at the circuit pack level, but not necessarily the chip or component or function within that box or within that circuit pack that went wrong. So faults will let you do that. So the alarm fields, this is the alarms, not the faults. So the alarms these are the fields, those other fields that we have defined in the FM metadata. So there's an alarm ID, which gives a unique identifier for the alarm name, which gives basically a short, concise name for what that alarm is in CAML format with no spaces. So for example, you might have a base station synchronization problem. The event type falls into one of several categories: communications, processing, environment, quality of service, equipment integrity, operational, physical violation, security, service mechanism violation, or time domain violation. These are driven from the 3GPP TS32.1111, and that tells you the kind of fault it might be. So if you had like a communication, you lost communication, that might be a class of alarms called communications alarms, right? The alarm description just provides a description of the alarm. The effects gives an effect of the consequence of the alarm. And then you can associate manage objects with the alarm. And then the probable cause and probable cause numbers. There's a number of standards which suggest probable causes that can be used. The TS32.111, NXB, ITU-T M3100, the IANA, ITU-T alarm definitions, and recommendations in X.721, X.733, and X.736. And then you can indicate proposed repair actions, and then a clearing type, whether it's manually cleared or whether the system automatically clears itself, and additional text and associated faults that can be associated with the alarm, which the alarm, if you had a tire issue, you know, the fault would be the front driver, you know, tire, driver side tire, front left tire or front right tire might be the fault ID, for example, which tells you more, which links the alarm to the fault. And then similarly, the faults can have fault ID, fault name, fault description, the effect, the proposed repair action, and additional text, which are similar in concept to the alarm. So in the event registration YAML, the NFs would provide the, as you'll see in a couple slides from now, those additional fields, and they describe the fault events that NF is going to emit. And there's a basically a YAML definition file where you can onboard, a vendor can onboard all of the fault NPM data. So the FM metadata that's particular to a specific fault event can be included in that definition file. So it would provide all of the metadata for the fault so that a separate fault alarm dictionary doesn't have to be provided. And here's an example of that. So some header text, and we see for a fault event, so this is defining a fault event, we have a base station synchronization, and notice all of this is in a comment field. So between parentheses to parentheses, all of those fields I just showed you, like alarm name, ID, description, effect, manage objects, event, probable cause, and so forth, these are all part of a comment in the VES registration. So I think the VES team didn't want to add these as individual separate fields, although we had suggested that. They eventually got added as a comment field. So that's very important to note that all of this is essentially, all these fields are optional essentially, and we suggest that you follow using these fields and with these definitions, but how you actually specify it in the fault listener and fault registration, the two have to match up, of course, so that when you're defining a fault, then the one end, the PNF knows how to emit a VES event, and then ONAP, when you onboard that definition, knows how to get that message. Okay, so we see here basically the header file of a VES event. So all of these are header information, right? All of these are header type things, version, domain, name, and so forth. And then there are these, this is the fault fields. So the fault field version, event category, alarm condition, event source type, alarm interface A, specific problem, event severity, and NF status. So within, there are many types of VES events. Fault is one of them, one of the many types. Others like our heart beating and PNF registration and so forth. and these are ones that are standard defined fields in the fault event. So the version, the category, conditions, source, and so forth. And then here's where that the additional information has all of those extra fields where we're defining the FM metadata in. So you see, you can define
Hey, Ben,
alarms in that.
So yeah, Ben, just go back to that slide before that. So I'm trying to understand.
Yep.
The common event header, that event name, is that a fault or is that an alarm?
So this whole thing is a So here's the thing that's very confusing. So the VES document doesn't differentiate between fault and alarm. So everything is called a fault. That's an important point to note. It probably would just be useful if I just showed you the VES document itself. Let me see, I think it's this one here. Oops. Or wait, the third one. Okay. Okay, page 18. Page 12. Okay. So hopefully this is the right one. Oop. Why isn't this? Okay. Event. Called fields. Heartbeat. Okay. So here you see, this is the, these are basically the fields that are in common to all VES events. So like what kind of domain it is. So these are the different kinds of VES events. There are fault, heartbeat, measurement, mobile flow, notification, perf 3GPP, PNF registration, SIP signaling, state chain, syslog, threshold crossing, alert, TCA, and voice quality. So for all alarms, basically it uses this fault domain. So a PNF will only emit an alarm, basically. So you can associate faults with it, and you can define that in the FM metadata. But essentially only an alarm, or something that you want a ONAP operator to be aware of, is sent. So in that description I just gave before, it's basically just an alarm that's sent up to ONAP.
Right, but the additional fault pieces of it, that's why I was curious, because we've overloaded the term. And
exactly.
So what I'm used to seeing is that what you're calling a fault, I always termed as a condition, right? It's a contributing condition.
Yeah. So this is what I know, and it's good to have a presentation on this, because I know it's confusing to a lot of people, especially when we're overloading terms. So ONAP calls anything that you want an operator to see, like an alarm, essentially, a fault. So every kind of problematic fault sort of related thing is a fault, and it falls under the fault VES event. So there's not a separate fault VES event and alarm VES event. There's just a fault VES event. and in general, you would only send up information about alarms, but we're doing that under the fault VES event, which is, I know why it's, that's why it's confusing, right? So these are the fields that come up in that fault VES event. Alarm, the condition, the interface, the category, severity, and so forth. And you'll notice that and this additional alarm information is where you can send up these other additional stuff, like the probable cause and so forth, right? and you see all of these definitions here is how you could send this up in this additional information stuff. So that's where you would that's where you could send up these additional fields. So I know that's a little confusing, and we tried to stem that tide of confusion by adding in, you know, we were proposing at first, I think, to add in other fields which correspond to these other things here, which I think would have alleviated a lot of the confusion. So had there been new fields for alarm name, ID, probable cause, and so forth, in the actual fault event, I think it would be a lot less confusing. But in the end, they decided to add all those other fields that I just described in this additional information field. So that kind of also gives you some flexibility, though, in that you know, when you send up the event or how you define the event and stuff, you have some flexibility in choosing what to use. So if a particular vendor, you know, Ericsson, Huawei, or Nokia, for example, doesn't want to describe, I don't know, whatever, the alarm effect or the proposed repair action, you don't have to. In fact, you don't have to define any of these things. These are all essentially additional information, right? So long as you are able to onboard it and the service provider kind of agrees with the vendor, the, you know, the things that they have that are that they want to see are useful. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, you're defining all these things so that an operator, a human, a user of ONAP, or a closed loop or policy or something in ONAP can take action, appropriate action to do a closed loop or to perform a policy or to do something, to take some kind of action. And these fields just simply tell you, you know, when this happens, this is the effect on the system, and this is the probable cause, and this is the sort of action you might want to take. It just basically helps you define those policies and actions that you might want to take. So I hope that that was clear. Did that make sense, Tim?
Yeah, I understood. I it's just that the translation was, you know, to me, fault's a condition and an alarm is the fault.
Right? Yeah. I know it's confusing. It. Yeah, thanks. All right. Okay. All right, good question though. Okay, so so again, I just showed you the header. So the version, event name, domain, event ID, event type, and so forth. These are the fields in the header. and we had to investigate the header to see if there were header changes we needed or just to understand what you would want to send. In the notice that we're using the fault domain, which is, you know, an important thing, that the event ID would be like fault YYY, where fault is the domain and event ID is incremented for each unique occurrence of the alarm. and this helps ONAP determine if a fault event was missed, and we don't increment the event ID for subsequent reporting of the same alarm or clearing of the fault, and only increment it if there's a new occurrence. So therefore, if the PNF reboots, it goes back to zero. So the first fault is 001. So that's something that's kind of important to note. And the source name indicates the PNF name, the PNF dash name. And as Oscar and I pointed out, that this is one of the things that's causing some confusion, and or there's some schema change in ANI that is in being investigated to change. And this is where the NF name that uniquely identifies the NF is being sent. And a lot of things are keying off that name. So that's why it's so important to resolve that issue. Is ANA going to make that schema change? So we're trying to close that as soon as we can. I've had many, many, many meetings on that topic already. And I thought it was all resolved until at the 12th hour. And I'm glad, you know, we talked about it at the pre-realization call so that you know, it's we can try to get agreement and communicate the issues. Okay. So priority is based on the event severity, critical time, major is medium, cleared is normal, warning is low. The start epoch microsecond is the time that the fault was first observed and was reported until the alarm is cleared. So there's actually, if you search on the internet, you can actually, there's this epoch time, which is the time since January 1st, 1970, don't know if that's like the birth of the internet or something, but that's defined as the epoch time. So if you type in today's date, you know, March 6, 2019, it'll give you that time that has elapsed since January 1st, 1970 in microseconds. And that's the start and epoch time. Okay, and the VES event version that you're using. And then the GMT offset, time zone offset. Okay, so myself, Zhu Shang, and Michaela have been, and with the development teams, have been working on the PNF onboarding and pre-onboarding use case, which there's also a presentation to, you can listen to the recording of in these realization calls, and has been presented many times at other forums as well. So what's important to note here is that, like I showed, that there's a PNF onboarding package that's part of a CSER file. It's also a CSER file. and in there, the VES dictionary YAML, and these are all suggested directories and names, but there's the artifacts, and in the deployment artifacts under the events directory, you can put, for example, a VES dictionary YAML. And in the artifacts and deployment and measurements, you can put the PM dictionary YAML as an example, right? So Zhu Shang, who's on the call, drew up this really wonderful slide, or he and Michaela drew up this great diagram. Zhu, did you want to say anything else about this?
Well, the only comment that I can give is I have some update on this this package structure. There was mm-hmm. some minor typo there. So
okay, yeah. So
if you want to change to the new one?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we are working with Nokia is working with together with Ericsson, and we're delivering this PNF onboarding pre-onboarding use case. Right now, you know, we're meeting, you know, twice a week, and I think we have a sample package produced, and we have some example, you know, YAMLs that are being incorporated in. And I think this is the structure that we're actually using, right? This shows the actual directories in that sample package, right? Zhu?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, okay. All right. So if you're interested in that, we often meet and talk about this in the SDC call, and we give updates. Again, in M3, we're also about to define the requirements as well, and we're looking to define what's in that package now and actually onboard it for real in SDC and try to work out the development kinks. Okay, so so this is, well, let me show you what I think the GUI will eventually look like in El Alto, or hopefully in El Alto. So the whole idea of the GUI part of it is to display the faults in a more human readable format. So all of those fields that I described, the alarm ID, name, event type, description, effect, manage object class, probable cause number, pose repair action, and so forth, would be across the columns in a GUI, and then each alarm would be there on its own separate row. So for example, the base station synchronization problem, alarm 7108, would be in its own row with, you know, all of its definitions, so you can more easily and clearly see the fault. That said, it is possible to look at a raw onboarded file, and let me just show you what that looks like so you can kind of see it. that other slide that I showed you is kind of what it actually looks like, right? So all that information is there. It's just not very easy to sort of see. But I mean, if you know what you're looking for, you look at the you look at the comment section and you see here's a definition of a particular alarm, and here's a definition of another alarm, and so forth. So you can see it. This makes it a little easier to navigate. Additionally, ultimately, we want to be able to filter and let an operator look and search on particular things in a easier to manage interface. Eventually, you'll be able to, after you filter, to be able to see what things you want to pick, and then hopefully that GUI will be able to be incorporated and used in those other GUIs that we talked about, like Clamp, the Policy Designer, and DCADS. Okay. So now the development team is also fairly new to the various projects, and this is something that they're still getting their feet wet, and they're still trying to learn how all this works. So in the first release, they're trying something just simpler, just to have all those comment fields just be in one column, and take a baby step and just to simplify the view, instead of having all these in the separate columns, just to have all of the comment field be one column. So it's still a little bit more readable, and hopefully by R5 it'll be more readable with all the columns in their separate own columns. Okay, so in R4 we'll still have limited filtering, and then a better and more enhanced filtering by El Alto. And you know, the ultimate goal is not just to display it in the SDC deployment artifact GUI, but to have it usable in other GUIs. I believe this is going to be developed in AngularJS, which also allows it to be incorporated into other GUIs using that same mechanism. And again, all of this data would be pulled in from the onboarded alarm definition YAML. And ultimately, we'd like this to be used in a GUI such as Policy Clamp and DCADS that would actually use these alarms. And at first, I'll show you in the next slide here. At first, we're using it in the deployments, the SDC deployment artifact screen. So you see here, this is in the catalog. You can go to a particular NF, and then you can go to a resource, and then you can, for that NF or PNF or VNF, you can go to its onboarded artifacts. So there's, you know, deployment artifacts, informational type artifacts, task artifacts, composition, operation, activity log deployments, and so forth. And if you click on the deployment artifacts, you'll see the artifacts that are associated with that NF that were onboarded. And then there's this little magnifier, I believe, that they want to be able to click on something, and you can look inside that artifact, and then that'll bring up this GUI, right? That's the idea of the GUI project part of this use case. So there's lots of different types of artifacts, as you see, and the VES event registration is a particular artifact. You see, or the PM dictionary is a particular artifact that's onboarded that's associated with the NF resource. basically, as we have it working for one PNF or VNF, we'll be able to hopefully be able to make it work for things that other PNFs or things that have multiple packages and so forth. So that's one of the ongoing things that we're doing. To define, so this will probably be a use case in El Alto as well. Okay, any questions before I move to PM? All right, so the PM stuff is, if you got your mind around the FM stuff, I think the PM stuff is pretty similar. Again, there's a different artifact that's onboarded for the PM dictionary, and it defines all the PM measurements that can come from a PNF. So there's lots and lots of performance measurements that tell you the operations or how your box is doing, and whether they're, you know, for example, there's call drops and from those KPIs, key performance indicators, can be composed using basically formulas that take measurements as parts of the formula, and it can tell you even more about how your system is doing, okay? So again, all that stuff's onboarded into the catalog, and there's different GUIs that take that can use those eventually. For example, Policy Designer might want to take some action or control loops to define types of feedback loops that ONAP could take action on particular KPIs or measurements. and there's also a bulk PM use case, which Ericsson is spearheading right now in R4 for this PM mapper function that's going to take that these various files from all these various vendors and be able to map them onto a VES event. So again, so one part of this use case is basically defining the updates that are needed for the VES event in the measurement schema, and another part is this sort of stretch goal of showing it in a GUI in a nicer, more human readable format in the SDC Design Studio. So the PM dictionary work has very similar sort of components to it in the use case conceptually as the FM part. So there's a VES event listener specification, an onboarded dictionary YAML file, a PM dictionary YAML artifact, and then a GUI part to display that PM dictionary, and then some VNF requirements work that also has to come along as well. So this kind of shows you quickly the flow of the flow of the PM dictionary usage. The PNF or VNF connects and authenticates to and establishes a connection to the DCA VES collector, which is where all of the VES events come into ONAP. So that's kind of the gateway into ONAP. And it authenticates through TLS, and then a file writing notification is sent up to the DCA VES collector, and it publishes that event onto the DMAT message router. And then the file collector basically goes and updates and uploads that PM file, and then retrieves and publishes that it successfully did that. So in the PM dictionary, ONAP displays a list of available measurements, and an operator can select desired measurement, and then this PM mapping file is generated so the PM mapper knows how to create these events. And this YAML definition document is generated so that the analytics applications know which events to subscribe to and the content and format of the event. So this is kind of how the PM stuff it works in general, and how performance measurements would be sent up and ingested into and processed in ONAP. So the PM dictionary provides detailed information about each measurement that an NF can produce, including its name, ID, measurement object class, description, collection, method, range, value ranges, unit of measure, triggering conditions, and other information. And basically the PM dictionary is used by the AA developers to so that actions can be taken, or analytics can take action or and be developed to compose, you know, either closed loops or to show problems, or to basically take algorithmic action upon those measurements, right? So now, generally speaking, and I realize I'm making some generalizations here. So, you know, you're going to have you're going to have some measurement changes, and every release is probably going to have or may have measurement changes, and they'll be associated with a particular software release of your NF. So, there's an infrastructure in place to allow those measurements to be associated with a package, and that you'll see some fields that let you do that. So the PM dictionary is used by SDC to display a set of measurements that supported from a PNF and from SDC. We'd like the operator to be able to select a desired measurement from the PM mapper performance measurements and configure the NF to generate these high volume VES events for real-time PM. And a mapping file is used so the PM mapper knows how to create these events, format, and content of the PM mapping file that you still use yet is being worked. And then you can version the PM dictionary as well through this PM definition version field, which you'll see in a second. So in the fields of the PM dictionary, there'll be a definition version of the dictionary itself, the NF type that this dictionary applies to, for example, the 5G node B, the vendor, Ericsson Holly or Nokia, the software version that this dictionary aligns to. So, you know, your version 1, 2, 3 of your product, the measurement information ID, which is a name for a group of related measurements in the 3GPP format, For example, you know, NR intra-frequency PSL change. And then the measurement info ID number is a defined numeric identifier, and then a 3GPP information abbreviation. And then the measurement type, so a measurement name used in the PM in 3GPP format. So you can also, the vent can be vendor specific as well. So vs.vs is a vendor specific defined name for the field, an abbreviation for the string, and the measurement ID description, what it is, excuse me, its condition, type and range, that's an integer, its value range, and its units. Okay, so, and then the object class, collection method, and last change and aggregation level. So these are all basic, you know, basic performance measurements type definitions that would define a performance measurement. So basically all of these are defined in that PM dictionary YAML. and a lot of these are, so the 3GPP standards does define a lot of measurements and suggested measurements. And it's really, though, up to an operator, between a vendor and operator, to agree on a set of definitions that, that can be used, right? Or that will provide the meaning of what these things are. Again, there's also loads that are built, and there can be mechanisms, and you just have to communicate between the vendor and the service provider what dictionary is being used and how you're building them, and the mechanisms for building them and associating the package with a particular software load for the box. So the idea ultimately, again, very similar, is to have all these fields be a lot more human readable. All of those PM fields would be columns, measurement info ID and number and mesh type and abbreviation, description, condition, and so forth. All of those things that I just showed you in the PM dictionary, just making it a lot more readable so that all of those fields are in their own separate column. And then the and then each particular measurement would be its own row. Okay. So pretty simple idea that you know, that's the, similarly, that would be the GUI development. Again, that same team is developing this PM GUI as well. So it's, at first I think it's going to be pretty simple, and then it'll be more evolved later on. So again, very limited filtering, and the display again might be not quite as elegant as this at first, but this is the long-term goal, to eventually let other GUIs, such as the policy GUI, to be able to use specific measurements and to be able to filter on measurements that they want to use. Okay. And then this was some discussion we had about in the PM mapper. So we had a meeting with Mark Scott from Ericsson, who was working on the PM mapper, work, and there's also an AngularJS GUI that's being developed for that, which basically allows an operator to open up a file and browse and select and pick a file and select a set of counters. So basically you can open up a particular class of base station 4G or 5G, and then from there there could be associated a set of dictionaries for that class of base station, and then you can open up and it would have a set of PM dictionaries, and then from that PM dictionary you can look and see the definitions in that dictionary. Okay, so that's basically it for the PM dictionary GUI and PM dictionary use case, and the and the FM metadata use case that's being done in Dublin. So I think things are coming along for M2. APIs were defined in at a high level, the integration test cases and the requirements. So Marge has been working that now, and We'll be taking that to the requirements subcommittee team. And the I've had some meetings with the development team. So the GUIs are I think well underway, at least being understood of what we can try and do in Dublin. Like I showed you the at first we just hope to have some really simple GUI that you can see at least in a little bit more readable format. Okay, any final questions on this? Okay, good. So there are, I think probably one of the highest, high running things that we've been talking about, I think from last time is there was the BBS use case had a platform evolution and ANI schema change to be able to detect a re-registration, which affects the BBS use case and the plug and play use case. So the at first, I think there was an idea to use an attachment point as a new field in ANI. And now I think this has been resolved to use an edge to logical link instead of an ANI schema change. And last week we left it at the plug and play wiki was going to be updated, and there was the requirement 6230 will be updated as we have more details about this solution. So I think that's still something that's really important. I can add it here. Tim, I don't know. Do you have any?
Yeah, it was resolved, and I got with Damien, and we're going to update it this week. Is what he's made the commitment for.
Right, okay, now. Great, wonderful. Okay, all right. Right. All right. So that's something that's important that we should be paying attention to. There will be a meeting. Let me see if I can. Okay. All right. So there is going to be a meeting. Let's see if I can see here. Okay. There we go. All right. So for March 6, 2019, there's a meeting with I'll be meeting with Jimmy and Chakar this afternoon on this topic. Oops. So requirements being developed. I know we're going to the VNF RQTS project. So the next step is, of course, because many other platform things may depend on this, we need to also socialize as soon as possible what the outcome of this, whether it's this change is actually going to happen or not. I think that's important to communicate as soon as we can. I had also some detail on the actual, there's an actual Jira ticket open for this SDC 209495. Okay. All right. So we just have a couple of minutes left, 4 minutes left. And I think we'll table some of these other discussions for next time? Are there sort of our ongoing topics? Remember last time we had also a very late coming use case to the game the firewall use case carryover, and we had a short presentation from Barath on that. So Zhu, did you have any thoughts on? We've been attending modeling calls and SDC calls and PNF onboarding and pre-onboarding. Do you think there's anything we want to mention related to that for the platform evolution? Is there something that we need like a broader audience to be aware of? Are there things that things happening in the platform that affect many other use cases you think that we should talk about?
I don't know what you want to talk about because we already had a general presentation about that.
Yeah.
You want the demo or you want the
progress where we think we're now. And are there things that are affecting other, like I think, you know, some of the things that I can think of are, there's a discussion about the Etsy SOL004 and SOL001 extensions for PNF. And there's a number of modeling things happening for the PNF descriptor, Jesse Jewitt, and in the modeling call that's happening that kind of affects a bunch of things. I think just defining that mapping between the onboarded PNFD and the ONAP platform, that ONAP platform data and information model, right? That's things that affect like kind of everybody. I think also in the architecture call that was this week, there was some, I mean, we also had, there's some things happening in the use case calls where we're discussing how to document the APIs. I don't know if that might be something we need to also pay attention to. And then that was being brought to the architecture subcommittee, I think. and also we're about to hit the M3 milestone in on March 14th. So there's been a lot of work in the various, that's just like next week, right? So there's been a lot of work from the subcommittee teams, the general overarching subcommittee team, the 5G use case teams, and submitting and understanding what the milestones are. So we had updated in the 5G use cases, the team added a section to describe the API impacts. And there's also a submission for each of the use cases that you're supposed to submit your API changes and to meet with the PTL so that they understand what those API changes are. Okay. Okay, any final thoughts before we close? We're at the top of the hour now, so. Okay, if not, thank you everybody for attending, and I hope you found this useful. See you next time. Thanks.